Well, there are things we keep because of sentimental value or just because we think they're pretty or interesting. But I think it's human nature to wonder if that item might be worth big money, too. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Shirley Bauman is a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She's the owner of Bauman Auction Services, and she comes by a few times a year to tell us what's hot in the appraisal world. Shirley, thanks so much for joining us again.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
So, you know, the condition of the economy has affected, obviously, many aspects of life. What has it done to the home auction market?
Well, it's very interesting. There's a lot of changes in that market. You know, there used to be a day when people were going to move, say, from Wisconsin out west, and they would have a household auction and start over when they got there, use the proceeds from their auction. Well, things have changed so much that that household auction is almost no longer feasible. Unless the owner has something like fine antiques, fine art, or bigger ticket items like vehicles, motorhome, and maybe even the real estate. Let's look at those reasons. Today we have a disposable society. Instead of going to an auction for a whole day to buy some used appliance, someone will go to the discount store, pick one up, and go on with their family activities.
Or go on Craigslist.
Yes, go on Craigslist if they want something used. It's faster and easier. On the, you know, internet has changed things. And also the costs of having those auctions have increased a lot. If you look at the costs of advertising, insurance that has to be held, the auctioneers now are using technology, where in the past it used to be, you know, pen and paper. So there's the cost of hardware and software and all of that that goes into it. Labor costs are up, so that an individual, you know, a seller has to be able to cover those costs before realizing any profit. So there really has to be some specialty items in there for that to be to work out anymore.
So the situation you were talking about is if a family or an individual is moving and doesn't want to incur the cost of moving, all those things. What about something like an estate sale where the person has passed away and so, you know, things have to be disposed of?
Yes, that can be different. We both do estate auctions and estate tag sales. And again, we have to look at that with the eye that there is enough quality things to bring out buyers, and then that they will pay the amount of money that it takes to put on that event with, you know, something left for both the workers and the seller.
Right.
So,
and a tag sale is something where there are fixed prices?
Fixed prices. We go in ahead of the time and we tag the things with a price. And people will come in during the hours that we're open. Usually it's 1 or 2 days on the weekend. And, you know, just purchase things for those prices. So there are, you know, different ways to do that. And in some cases, the best advice I can give to people if they don't have anything that might draw customers in is donate it. Pick out the things that have sentimental value to your family and then donate it if there isn't anything out of the ordinary other than like household goods.
Right. And in that case, it might be minimal compared to what the money that you would get if you were able to sell everything, but at least the estate would get a tax write-off.
The estate would get the tax write-off at that point. Right.
Another kind of element of the economy coming into play, a lot of people see precious metals as a good nest egg to have or an investment. With silver especially, how do you know if it's silver that makes more sense to melt down if you have it or keep it as an antique?
I get that question so often when I'm out on an appraisal. And it's not a real easy answer, but this is the way to go about it if you're wondering about it. You need to weigh the silver first. And the way I do that is I take one of those luggage scales there where you hang the luggage on the little hook, and I put a mesh bag on there, and you get the weight of that bag. Usually it's very, very minimal. And then you put your silver there, if whether it's hollowware like pitchers and teapots or flatware like your knives and forks and that kind of thing, put them in there and weigh it. And then go on the internet and find out what the current silver spot price is. And that'll tell you how much it would be for melt. And then go and do some research and look at your items online and see how much they've been selling for. Now, not what people are asking for them. They can ask anything, but what they actually have been sold for. And then you'll come to some kind of reasonable answer for that. But there is one caution that I want people to be aware of. This only will work with sterling silver.
Okay.
If it's silver plated, there is no melt value because that's a base metal
right.
with a thin coating of silver over it.
And so they can't separate it. Yeah.
Right, right.
Let me add
that to find out if you have a sterling or silver plate, you usually look on the bottom or the back of flatware. If it says EPNS, that stands for electroplated nickel silver, or it will say plate, usually anything at least made in this country that is sterling will be marked sterling.
And you were saying, you know, to go and see what people have actually been paying for similar items. Mm-hmm. Where are some good sites or resources for that?
Well, if you do like to look at eBay, because there's so much out there, mm-hmm. look at the completed sales. On the left of the screen, you have to scroll down and it'll say show only completed mm-hmm. listings. So look at those and then find those that have actually been sold like yours. You might find out that somebody asked $1,000 for something and it never was sold.
Right.
Or it may have been sold for a lot less than that. So
so you want to look at what the market is actually paying, right. not what
people
are hoping
asking,
to get.
Hoping, that's right.
Are there some other areas that have really increased in interest lately? What are people really dying to get their hands on?
Well, I think advertising is one of the hot things right now. I had a live auction a couple weeks ago, and we sold a small, rather small porcelain sign for nearly $600. It was for oysters, of all things, but it was porcelain.
A porcelain sign. That's
right,
interesting.
Right, right. And you see a lot of that. We had some other large tin-painted signs that went for, you know, in the hundreds as well. And that's been hot. Even photographs of old, we had a photograph a while back of the old Indian motorcycle factory. And that went for good money, too. So people are looking for even those, pieces of paper that document the products,
mm-hmm.
because that can be framed and hung,
right.
and you can enjoy it that way, as signs can. If you were some of the things you can't quite show that way, but if you have a book, maybe,
right.
People like to show what they've collected. But the advertising is one of those things that's really gone high lately.
We're talking with Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She's the owner of Bauman Auction Services. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Rob Ferret, our on-air producer, waiting to take your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have something special and you wonder what it might be worth? Do you buy things as investments or more because you just like them? If you're a collector, what do you collect? We'd love to hear from you. You can also post a photo of an item on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show, and Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Shirley will take a look. She might not be able to give you a complete idea of the value without being able to see it in person, but a photo can always be helpful and interesting for the rest of us. Shirley, we were talking about advertising, and Peggy in Ironwood, Michigan has a related question, so let's go there. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. I've got a couple of signs that are hand stenciled. My husband thinks that they sat on maybe the edge of a wagon or something. They have brackets on either side on the bottom. And they're definitely hand done. They're brown stained, and then the lettering is like a mustard yellow. And they advertise window dressings, you know, framing. So it maybe from a general store of some sort. We bought an old farm here, and they were up in the barn.
Sure. That's one of the places where a lot of signs are found, because actually you'll see them sometimes nailed to the sides of the walls kind of as insulation or windbreak, even those old metal signs and things. So we hear a lot of them found there. Condition is important. The product is important. It sounds like there isn't a store name or a particular product being advertised there. So that makes a little bit of difference. That will hold down the value somewhat. But people still like signs that just say interesting things from the days gone by. And exactly what your value is, I don't know. Like I said, it depends so much on the condition and quality of it.
I mean, they're in wonderful condition. The lettering is all intact, and the color is nice. I mean, they're as I said, kind of muted browns and a mustardy kind of yellow is the letters.
Did you say they were metal?
No, they're wood.
They're wood, okay.
And they're like 3x6.
3x6, that's a fairly good size piece. So you may have something that could be in that, 100 or 2 range. They're certainly worth keeping a hold of, or if you aren't attached to them, seeing if they might fit into an auction or something in your area.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, thanks for the information. I appreciate it.
Thanks, sure. Peggy. And, you know, it's always interesting to me, you were talking about how advertising, you know, is popular right now. Do we know what drives those kind of trends, or is it kind of a mystery, like why a particular thing comes up in fashion at a particular point in time?
Well, some of it is a mystery. However, if you look at popular culture, and let's say you watch the History Channel and see American Pickers, well, they're going after advertising a lot, and I think that helps drive that market when a wide audience sees that. And why did they go with advertising?
Right.
Well, they were able to sell it, and who knows why,
right,
you know.
Right.
But it's all kind of the chicken and the egg there with what came first. But that certainly does affect it, as well as, you know, the magazines and internet shows and things like that, you see those trends going on. The other thing, for example, Victorian furniture is out right now. Mid-century modern is pretty hot, which means things from the, 50s, give or take, into the 40s to the 60s, that modern thing. And that's because younger people who are furnishing their homes, that's their nostalgia.
Right. Right.
And the older people who have the Victorian things are trying to sell them. Well, that was their nostalgia, and now that's just passé.
So part of it is so you're talking about like younger people today who might be furnishing, you know, their first kind of adult house or apartment.
Mm-hmm.
It's what that audience is looking
it's
for.
It's what that audience is looking for. Yeah. They were looking for things they grew up with as their nostalgia rather than what was in great grandma's house when they were little and kind of scared of things.
I wonder too if programs like Mad Men, you know, that are placed in a particular period of time influence those kind of things.
They
too.
Certainly do. And if you watch TV on any of these collector shows and auction shows, you kind of can see what's going. And there's so many of them on right now. Even I saw something last night picked off on, it was on right after the Antiques Roadshow. And these pickers went out and got some things, and then they put them all up for auction to see who made the best buys. So it's on public television, and it's on commercial television all over. So you can kind of watch that, and that sort of helps show off the trends as well.
We are talking with Shirley Bauman. She is an auctioneer and appraiser, and you can join in by posting a photo of an item on our Facebook page or giving us a call at 800-642-1234. And there is a photo on the Facebook page. Gina posted, "This is a bracelet that my father was given in Mexico. The maker's mark looks like an Aztec head, but it's very small and hard to read. What are some good sites to search for this mark?"
Well, there are sites on the internet. If you look for Mexico jewelry marks, you will find out. If you Google that, you will find some of them. And you may also find books in your library that have them. And there were so many marks. That Mexican jewelry is hot right now. Mm. And that's another thing, the silver, the old Mexican and Native American silver with turquoise and such.
Yeah, there's a very pretty stone in this. It looks like a greenish stone, but not a solid green.
Yeah, it's hard to see the color on the screen that I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. But yes, that's popular right now. Look at that. There are a lot of makers there, especially in the 40s, 30s, that had studios. And then there were break-offs of those. So one person who worked at that studio would break off and have another one. So do look for that mark. They are on the internet. Again, Mexican silver jewelry marks.
Great. Thanks for that photo, Gina. And let's go back to the phone and Karen in Eau Claire. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I'm calling. This is a real interesting program. I bet I'm not the only one in this situation. We've got parents who have accumulated a lot of things that are very important to them, But they have the question of whether, as their household, what items in their household may have more value than others. And we were actually considering looking for someone to do an appraisal just to help us prioritize items. Can you give some advice as to how one might go about doing this and what sorts of things you might be looking for?
That's a great question, Karen. Thanks for calling.
It is a good question, and I run across this all the time. It's probably the reason more people call me than any other. And mostly it's like, well, we just don't know, and we don't want to give away something important. And what you want to do is find a generalist appraiser. Now, it doesn't mean that they can't also specialize in something, but if they only appraise watches and clocks, that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for a generalist. However, if you do find someone that isn't versed in everything, for example, I normally am not very much of an appraiser of weapons, but we might find some in an estate like that, then I call a specialist that I know and work with that person to help us out, get past those things that I might not be real well versed in. So you want to find somebody. You can go to the websites of the International Society of Appraisers, the Appraisers Association of America, or the ASA, American Society of Appraisers, and they all have a find an appraiser kind of a button, and you can find someone that's closer to you where you are. You know, you might find somebody in the Twin Cities. Now, there's also, and I'm going to mention this, there are also some very knowledgeable antiques dealers that can help you with that kind of general sorting type of appraisal. You do need certain credentials for tax appraisals, and insurers and those kinds of people want to know what kind of credentials we have. But there are very knowledgeable antiques dealers that can tell you, boy, do I just have something of value or things that should go to Goodwill. And so if you talk to some of the antiques malls or shops in your area and you start to get the same answer of someone who could do that for you, then I would talk to that person. But do not sell the items to that person. As an appraiser, we don't buy the items we value because you could see the potential for conflict of interest there.
Or worse.
Or worse, yes. Yeah. You know, I'm just going to say the value is low so I can buy it low.
Right.
And it's whether people intend to do that or not. I'm not saying that, you know, people are always intending to do that, but there is that potential. So the appraiser should not buy your goods.
See, so does it make sense to say have an appraiser come in and just sort of do a rough sorting of the wheat from the chaff and then more detailed appraisals of items expected to be of higher value?
Yes, and I do that a lot with people too. And I do this, what I call a walkthrough, kind of verbal approximation of value. This has good value. This is, you know, not so much. And decide, you know, a dollar value. Maybe it's if anything's over, I don't know, $200, $500, whatever you think is worth the investment in the formal appraisal. Normally, or I shouldn't say normally, but in many cases, a lot of people tell me, well, we're not going to put something on our insurance rider if it's less than $500 because that's our deductible. Anyway, so if we have an item worth $500, then let's get that written up in a formal appraisal and get it scheduled on the insurance.
And so, Shirley, you said that the appraiser should never buy the items, but the appraiser could run the sale for
yes.
you.
Yes, okay. The appraiser could run the sale for you because basically you're on the same side of the table.
Right.
Because the more I sell for you, the more I would make for me because I would take a percentage.
So it's a percentage.
The
is there also usually a flat fee and then a percentage, or how does that work?
It can be. It all depends on how things are structured. Sometimes it's the cost of the sale, the advertising, the other labor and that kind of thing, plus a fee. Sometimes it's a higher percentage and the person covers more of the costs. It just depends on how things are scheduled between the two people that write the contract.
We're talking with Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. We are talking about what our collectibles may be worth other than sentimental value. And Shirley Bauman is always happy to come by and help us with that. And she is not only the owner of Bauman Auction Services, but also of Heirloom Appraisals and Estate Services. And we'll get both of those websites up. We have the website up for the Bauman Auction Service right now on Facebook. That is BaumanAuctions.com. And there are two N's on the end of Bauman. And Shirley, we have plenty of people waiting to talk with you. So let's go right back to the phone. And Darlene in Saginaw, Minnesota. Hi, Darlene.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a figurine that's about 4 to 5 inches tall, and I've never been able to find out anything about it, but I don't have access to the internet. So it's Thumper's Girlfriend from the Disney movie, and it was made back in the 40s. It says on there that it was made by the American Pottery Company of Los Angeles, and it's Mark Disney, Disney Girlfriend. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of Disney things out there, but I've never run across any of these that came out when the original movie came out. And I'm just kind of curious as to...
Let me ask you a little bit more about the marking on it. You said it was Mark Disney. Does it say Walt Disney Enterprises or Walt Disney Productions?
No, it just says there's a label on it that says Disney Girlfriend American Pottery Company, Los Angeles. There's no marking on the bottom or anything, but I remember getting this after I went to the Disney movie as a child back in the 40s.
Well, I'm wondering if it was authentic, licensed by the Disney company, because usually they were marked Walt Disney First Productions and later Enterprises. So if it isn't actually marked on the item, it may be something that was not authorized officially by Disney, which will make a difference in its value. It's good that it has a label on. That American Pottery Company is probably one of those 50s California potteries that made things in the 40s, 50s, kind of that mid-century time period. But Disney is always hot. People do look for the licensed items, so I'm not sure exactly in your situation. But I was at someone else's auction a while back, and there was a large Disney collection, and, you know, figurines, depending on who it was, you know, Mickey Mouse will go for more than Thumper's Girlfriend.
Although I have to say, I think the idea of Thumper's Girlfriend is pretty cute.
It's sweet. It's very yeah. sweet, yes. But there are people who have just Mickey collections, and I doubt if there's somebody who has just Thumper Girlfriend collections.
Yeah. Well, originally I had Bambi and Feline, too, but foolishly when I was young, I gave those away.
Ah, okay. Well, I can't really give you an actual value on it, but I think, you know, looking at what you're saying, Disney, I've seen Disney figurines go from $35 of that size to, you know, $150.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
Thanks for calling, Darlene. And it sounds like Darlene should definitely keep that sticker on the bottom.
Oh, yes. Anytime you have a sticker, a label, keep that on there.
All right, and let's go from the 1940s to considerably earlier with Chris in Two Rivers. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
What have you had for us?
Well, I've got a document, an indenture from King George in 1726, and I, you know, thinking that's a piece of history, I hate to be liable for it in case it gets lost in a fire or something. Is there some place that I can sell that thing or get an appraisal and see what it's worth?
Well, the first thing that you really need to do with that is get it authenticated.
Okay.
And that means, you know, is this a reproduction or is it the real thing from that period? And people will look at the your appraiser. Appraisers aren't necessarily authenticators.
Uh-huh.
So you do need somebody who knows historic documents. And sometimes appraisers know people who are specialists in historic documents and can help with that. But they look at the paper, the fibers in the paper, and how it's made.
Mm-hmm.
They would look at the writing and what is it? What is the ink, so to speak? At that period, it would have to be a natural-made ink.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be a chemical product or anything of that sort. So you'll have to get that done before you really could sell that, because someone would definitely want to know if it's authentic or not. So you can contact some appraisers, see if you can find, or look on the internet at those sites I gave before, the appraiser sites, and look for someone who's a specialist in historic documents.
Okay.
And that's where I would go with that for the first step.
And I was going to say, Chris, someplace like the State Historical Society probably has an idea of people that would be able to do that kind of documentation.
The State Historical Society does keep lists of people, as do museums sometimes. If you know of a museum that has the kind of collections you're talking about, historic documents, they very well might be able to point you to an authenticator.
I know a director of the museum over here, so that would be a good idea.
Perfect start.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Chris, and that sounds like a pretty interesting document to have. Let's go next to Nancy in Freeport, Illinois. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I'm calling about a metal sign I have. It says Hotel and Restaurant Employees Bartenders International Union, and it's them signed by the Secretary Treasurer and the General President at the time. It says American Federation of Labor recognizes this as a union house. The lady said they used to hang. It used to hang in a restaurant. I just wondered if you'd heard about these and maybe approximate value.
Let me ask you a few questions about the sign.
Sure.
Is it metal, wood?
Yes, it's metal.
Metal, and the condition?
It's in good condition. I'm not saying it doesn't have anything wrong with it, but you certainly can read everything on there.
Great. And about what size is it?
I'm not very good at size. It's not huge, but it's not real tiny either. Doesn't say anywhere.
Kind of a wall sign that you picture frame
would
fit in a picture frame of some sort, not
cover
an entire room.
No, it must have just hung over the bar or somewhere in the restaurant to, authenticate the fact that they had a license.
And it was a union shop. And I think that might be what brings the interest back around today. You know, we've seen and are seeing so much of our political environment discussing union and union rights and that kind of thing. And certainly in Wisconsin, we've seen that. And other states have, and I think that would bring that sign up to modern-day interests again, going back to the history of unions. And I haven't seen that one exactly, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised that would be a very desirable item. Again, I think I'd start searching the internet for something similar. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see something like that going into the $200-$300 range if it's in really good condition and such. Yes.
Okay. The back is a little bold, but it didn't affect the front of the sign.
Yeah.
It's signed by Ed S. Miller, and Hugo Enrich was general president.
Yeah, that might be a local union, or it could, union officials may not be known to a lot of people anymore.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know, Wisconsin was one of the early union states. And so I think there's a lot of interest in the Midwest on that kind of thing.
And Nancy, did you say if there's a date on there?
You know, I've looked and looked for a date. No, I can't find one. Mm-hmm. And I tried to find out who was Secretary Treasurer at that when Ed Miller was Secretary Treasurer at that time, and I'm not real good on the internet, so I haven't figured that out yet either. So, no date on it.
Well, it sounds like an interesting piece that might have some value and some historical significance, too.
It is.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks for that call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And let's go right to Dave in Madison. Hi, Dave.
Hi. How's it going?
Good.
Good. My mother showed me a doll a couple weeks ago that her dad had given her from back when he was stationed in Germany. And I was just wondering if something like that would have any value. It does have a little damage on it. I don't know if it's from just being thrown around in a box or a critter got a hold of it. There's a little damage to the nose on the doll. And you can tell it's hand-painted. It's very old-looking, really unique.
Sure. Well, the first thing I tell people to do with a doll is look at the back of its neck. Pull up the hair and look at the back of the neck, and there it might say something as to who made it. It may only have a number there. It may only say Germany in your case, or it may say the maker's name, Kessner, one of the German doll makers' names. And if you have a famous doll maker's name, that will make it more valuable than if it's just German. And what it's made out of makes a difference. Bisque porcelain, we see a lot of dolls made out of bisque, and that's unglazed pottery, ceramic. And you might see a China head doll. That's probably might not be what you have. You could also see composition dolls, which is, it was basically kind of a paste with wood shavings and that kind of thing that they used for a while, and they cracked very badly, very often.
Yeah.
So it depends on what it's made out of. The head is usually the most valuable part of the doll, so having some damage on the nose will be a problem. The body, you know, it might be a cloth body, it might be porcelain body, it might be kid leather. So that affects it. If it's, you know, World War I era, maybe a, you know, teens or something like
that. Is it World War I or World War II? Do you know, Dave?
You know, I'm not sure.
Okay.
It looks pretty old. Yeah, I'll have to look at it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it had a porcelain face. I believe, my first impression was I thought it felt like balsa or something. It's pretty lightweight.
That might be a composition doll. You know, I can't really give you, again, size of it matters. Tiny porcelain dolls can go from, you know, $30 on up, or bisque dolls, whereas, you know, maybe a 12 to 18 inch doll would go for a lot more. I've seen dolls from the early 1900s go for, with a famous maker in an excellent condition, go as much as, you know, $2,000 or more dollars. So it is, we really need to get some very specifics about it. You know, size, materials it's made out of, any maker's information and that kind of thing.
So it sounds like the first step is take a peek at the back of the neck.
Take it, yes. And sometimes, especially in newer dolls than the period we're talking about, it's at their lower back or in their rump, actually, where they're... marked, but mostly on that period, it would be the back of the neck.
Interesting.
Go there first.
And you wouldn't necessarily see that if you didn't think
That's
to
right.
lift
their
up the neck
would,
or the hair, yeah.
Right, the hair would cover that.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Dave. And let's go next to Tim in Appleton, who has an interesting item. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. I have a complete Ku Klux Klan outfit, the robe, the hood, a braided sash that would go around the stomach, a few patches are on it, and I have the ceremonial sword. And I'm wondering, how do I go about valuing this? It's very difficult to find anybody who knows anything about this stuff. It's authentic. It's probably Depression era, and it was from the Menasha, Wisconsin chapter. How can I get some information on this?
Wow, that's very interesting. And there's a couple of things to think about. You know, I go back to the Hitler items, which you can't sell on eBay anymore. However, they are a part of history, just as much as the outfit you're talking about is something we don't necessarily like thinking about these days.
No, but it's important to...
It's important to remember and know our history. The local historical society or the state historical society may have some information, and I would start with them. They won't appraise it, but they, again, might give you names of appraisers. What I would look at it in, you know, there have probably been some of those sales done, and I would say more of them maybe in the southern United States than around here. And so we would be looking at nationwide auction results to try and value that. And your professional appraisers would have access to databases that they pay for auction results for decades. Mm. And, of course, we try to look at as close to today as possible. But what we would then look at is what others of those kinds of outfits have sold for, what condition it's in. You know, like a couple summers ago, I had a Hitler youth knife here. Again, it's that kind of thing that we don't like to think about, but there were buyers that came for that, and it did go above market value because it's so hard to find. Now, a knife is different. It's something you could show in your collection differently than a costume. So It's hard to say. That knife went for, I don't know, $550, something in that range. So, you know, get information as much as you can from the historical societies. If you find some of those accredited and certified appraisers through the professional appraiser associations, they have access to specialists all over the country, or, you know, for me, it's international, and I'm in the International Society of Appraisers. So we can usually find someone that can help direct us to answers with questions that we might not have because we haven't had that exact experience.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure. And also, it certainly seems like, you know, if Tim decides he doesn't want to sell it necessarily, it's such a complete, it sounds like such a complete ensemble that it could have some museum value as
well. It could have some museum value.
It does. For, it does, definitely. Yeah.
And if you would donate it to a museum, and maybe the State Historical Museum would be interested in, you can have it appraised and take that tax deduction then.
Right.
So you would still need to get that appraised.
Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Tim. That was a very interesting call. We are talking with Shirley Bauman. She is a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in today for Larry Mueller. And you can post a photo of an item you'd like Shirley to take a look at on Facebook. That's The Larry Mueller Show. And we do have a few up there that we'll get to shortly. The phones are full right now, but you can keep trying at 1-800-642-1234. Rob Ferret answering our phones today. Let's go to Rod in Gilman. Hi, Rod.
Hello. Yes,
what's your question?
I got a baby chair. I got it at a thrift market years ago.
I'm sorry, a baby chair?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, Rod, but we're really losing you. If you could try to maybe call back on a better phone line, we'll be happy to talk with you. Let's go to Billy in Madison. Hi, Billy.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Fine, eating lunch. Hey, my wife has been collecting Mickey Mouses pretty much her whole life, over 40 years. And we probably have 2,000 to 3,000 pieces. 99% of them are Mickey Mouses. From varying ages, from 30s all the way to present, we have some items that were able to be purchased by employees only, and so on and so forth. And many years ago, when we first started opening up the boxes and displaying them in our basement, we talked to an appraiser, and she mentioned that, well, you know, it takes a couple of hours per piece, and I charge $60 an hour, and we're like going, okay, that probably is not a good idea. Is there a way, for purposes of insurance, that we can get a general appraisal or something, or is there a way of doing that, or do you people really need to do like piece by piece to do an appraisal?
Well, Ed, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked that. What I would say is, if I were going to be doing your collection, that first you should sort it and pull out those older pieces, because those are the ones that are going to have significant value, and those are the ones we may need to do piece by piece. And then if you have collections of figurines or, you know, baseball caps from Walt Disney World and things that are more modern and less valuable, we can kind of do those as a grouping. And that is allowed to do that. But those higher dollar value items, the older ones, the Mickey Mouse with the old pie eyes, that kind of thing, maybe some of those items you said were only available to the people who worked there, you know, pulling those out when we could do those individually. But no, we wouldn't have to go through every little, you know, 3-inch figurine because that's just impossible. Well, it's not impossible, but it's just not practical.
Or it doesn't seem like it would be very cost effective.
It wouldn't be very cost effective. And as far as each item taking hours, no. A hard to find item may. And usually if I have one item, you know, I basically don't do anything for less than an hour's work, mm-hmm. but, cause that doesn't pay for me to go to someone's house and do all that time, you know, spend that time. But, I would say do that. And you can even do it in sections. First, you might do your oldest pieces and get that done now. and do a general kind of, and there's many more pieces here, so add this amount. And then maybe next year or something, you'll do the 40s pieces or the 50s and something of that nature, the things that you want to add on. But yes, it can be done differently. And I would say that not every piece in your collection will take hours per piece.
Okay, would there be value in me just videotaping the collection and keeping that videotape?
Yes, it would. Yes, there is.
In a deposit box?
Yes, there is value in that. And again, do the more valuable items a little bit more thoroughly. And what happens at that point, if you would have a loss, then you could bring an appraiser in who would do a, sometimes we call it a forensic appraisal. And the thing of it is, without having been seen in person prior to a loss, you might not get the full value, but you certainly would get some value. So the more thorough you can be with that videotape, the better level of protection you would have in case of a loss. I have worked with a lot of insurance companies in just that situation, just from pictures, and we do end up getting settlement out of it, but it probably isn't what you might get if we did look at every piece.
Do you have agents in the Madison area, or are you located out of the Madison area?
I am in Madison.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I should do is just get in touch with you offline, and we'll take it a little bit deeper and see where that goes.
That'd be fine. Thank you.
Great.
And
thank
also,
you for taking my call.
Sure. Billy, I had one quick question. You said when you were unpacking the boxes, did you mean storage boxes or like the individual packaging of the items?
No, not the individual packing. We know better now.
Okay.
No, it took me about 4 years to get the basement converted from an old basement into an actual Mickey Mouse display museum. So everything was packed and in storage during that period after we bought our house. So
great.
It's all pretty well displayed now and already organized, and that's why I'm glad that you said that, because that part's already done now. So now it's just a matter of contacting you and working out whether it's worth you're doing the appraisal for insurance reasons or not.
All right. Thanks for that call, Billy. And Billy brought up, we just referred to this, if something comes in original packaging, you really want to keep it in that.
Keep it in that if you can, yes. I know toys are made to play with, and if someone has played with the toy prior to you having it, but the box is still there, keep it together. It still will add value. But right now, for example, we have a Barbie doll online auction going on BaumanAuctions.com, and a lot of those collectible Barbies are new in the box, especially those from the 80s, 90s, and those periods. We have some Barbies that are older from the late 50s, 60s, also in that collection. One of them has an original box, one doesn't. Both of them still have value of those older, of a couple older ones I'm thinking of. There's more older than just two. But that person then started collecting and did not take them out of the boxes, and that does add to their value.
And so again, that online auction of Barbie dolls goes through a week from today.
Yes.
And that is at BaumanAuctions.com. And again, Bauman has two N's. It's BaumanN and then auctions.com. And you also have an online auction that goes through just tomorrow of locks and keys.
Yes.
That sounds really interesting.
Antique and vintage locks and keys. We're looking at padlocks from the turn of the century, maybe even earlier. Some are American, some are English, and keys and keys and keys for everything from watches to vehicles. Very interesting old brass locks and that kind of thing. If you want a hobby that has a lot to learn, antique locks and keys can be
it. And they're just cool.
They're just very cool to look at. And some people just use old antique keys for craft projects.
Oh, sure.
Putting them in shadow boxes and that kind of thing.
Or jewelry even, I could say.
Jewelry, yeah. So that's through tomorrow. So.
All right. And we have a link to BaumanAuctions.com on the Facebook page. And we are talking with Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She's the owner of Bauman Auction Services and also Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, talking with Shirley Bauman, who is an appraiser and an auctioneer. And as always, we're hearing from a lot of people, Shirley, with really interesting items. So let's go back to the phones and Patty in Door County. Hi, Patty.
Hi, ladies. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Let's see. My dad worked for Time Life magazine, and we happened to have the first magazine of people that ever came out. In fact, it was a rough draft. Liz Taylor is on the cover, and it's an original type from a typewriter. It never hit the stands. It was their first photocopy. I've got the first People and the first Sports Illustrated that ever came out but never went to public. And I'm wondering what the host might think of that.
Wow.
Well, I think you have some very interesting items, and I think they would be very much sought after by collectors. Value-wise, I'm not sure off the top of my head. That's something I'd have to research because it's a first of a kind. It's, we don't see that every mm-hmm. day. If I were trying to look at value, I would go to results from not only ephemera auctions. Ephemera means things that are fleeting, which paper is, or Hollywood collectibles. Mm. And that's also become quite a collecting area these days, the movies and Hollywood collectible. So I think you have a couple areas to look at, that ephemera as well as Hollywood. And I'd look at auction
and sports,
sales.
Too, right?
And sports, yes. I forgot about that, but the sports. And, you know, I think that sports memorabilia is one of those things that continues to go high. I believe it's holding, if not increasing, again, as a hot collectible always, because people like their sports. So I think that would have a great value, too. And People magazine, of course, has become so popular over the years that I think you've really got something special. That's where I'd start to look. You might go to, if you have something unusual like that, you might go to the Facebook page of the International Society of Appraisers and put up what you have and ask if any of the appraisers who are looking at the page might have some information for you.
That would be great. The other thing we have, too, is the original plates, the copper plates that pressed down on the magazines. Like we have the Beatles when they were on Life magazine. They were throwing them all away, and my dad just kept some of them. Rita Hayworth, some of the very famous Life covers. Again, would you do the same type of thing? Because they're big copper plates, but here they were, the magazine covers.
Yes, absolutely. I would do the same thing. And I would look at, I think those would be very, very collectible as well. Are you intending to keep them?
I don't know. The Liz Taylor one on People magazine, I thought, well, I would wait until, this is terrible, she passed, because then things change in value and
yep.
people are very much wanting, you know, something special mm-hmm. to remember her
yeah.
by. Are you saying something like $100? Would it be $500? Would it be $1,000?
I think it would be into those, that probably thousands range.
Okay.
And more. And but I would find a specialist in those areas. For example, I have a close colleague of mine who was the vice president of collectibles for Sotheby's until they closed that department. And so she has done all those big sports auctions for Sotheby's. And that's the kind of person that I would talk to on, like, that Sports Illustrated or any of the sports covers that you're talking about. So going that, she's also been a big Antiques Roadshow appraiser all the years it's been on. So going to that kind of specialist to find the best market if you're wanting to sell them. So don't just say, oh, I heard of this auction. Let, you know, have someone help you identify those specialists.
Thank you for your time. And as always, we love this program.
Oh, thanks, Patty. We appreciate it. And that brings up an interesting situation, I think, that, you know, often when someone asks the value of something, you say, well, go and look and see what those items are selling mm-hmm. for. But if it's really a one-of-a-kind item, it would seem like it's so much more variable depending on the interest. You know, is Rita Hayworth more or less valuable than, you know, than Liz Taylor? You know, like, it seems like it adds even more subjectivity to it.
It does add more subjectivity, but we would look at other things with those people on and how they have compared to each other. We would look at the firsts of other magazines. If there were, we can track sales of those. This Sports Illustrated she mentioned, I don't know who was on that cover, and that might make a difference. And what sport? I mean, if it was bobsledding, it might be different than if it was football.
Right.
So there's a lot of things to take into account.
Interesting. We do have some photos up on the Facebook page. Sarah writes, I found this kitty tea set at an estate sale a few years ago. The bottom is stamped Japan. I'm curious if you can guess its age. And it looks like a teapot and then maybe a creamer.
And an open sugar,
yeah. But they're interesting little kitties.
Sweet as can be. My guess is that they're probably in the 40s to 50s. And the reason I'm saying it is because the faces, the way they're painted, and that kind of pink and almost aqua green colors were really popular.
Very mid-century, yeah.
And in Japan, they were making a lot of ceramics like that during that period. So that's when I think they would be, probably that mid-century period. And they're really sweet.
They are. And they look like, I mean, at least what we can see in the photo, they look like they're in good shape. You can't see any chips or anything like that.
Not from the front. No, we can't see the bottom. We can't see the back. And that's a good point because that's why I don't appraise from photos.
Right, right. Yeah. And Felix brings up a question. Any chance of decoding who the artist is or potential value of a painting? It's kind of a street scene. I'm guessing that's really especially hard to do.
Well, it is when you don't have a signature. It almost looks like there might be a signature on the lower right corner. Mm-hmm. And if you can magnify that and see if you can figure out what those letters are, you might be able to come up with an artist. This kind of thing, it's hard to say. There were a lot of these that were done, and I don't know if this is a print, if it's an oil painting, if it's the kind of thing that was a furniture store decorative painting, in which you saw that a lot and that kind of thing. So, you know, trying to look at those letters and putting them in kind of different combinations on Google.
Great. And we are talking with Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. Lots more with Shirley after our look at the news. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. There was a fascinating story in the news last week. A person cleaning out their attic came across some old baseball cards that had been saved by other family members. He set them aside and only 2 weeks later took a closer look. It turns out they were from a rare 1910 series of baseball cards in perfect condition, and the estimates are that they're worth into the millions. But how often does that really happen? Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Whether it's in your attic, jewelry box, or china cabinet, chances are there's something that you own that you think may just be worth something. Shirley Bauman is a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. What do you have that you'd like to know more about? Wonder what its value might be? Shirley can help when you give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also leave a question or comment or a photo of your item on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Like the page to get regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back after the news. If someone told you that you would appear on Antiques Roadshow, what would you take with you? Have you always wondered whether you have something that's worth a lot of money, or maybe its value is only sentimental? I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Shirley Bauman is a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She's the owner of Bauman Auction Services and also Heirloom Appraisals, and she comes by a few times a year to help us understand the value of things that we've collected and how the appraisal and auction market's worth. It's always a lot of fun when she comes by. Shirley, thanks again for spending time with us.
You bet. My pleasure.
And Shirley, we have some people that have been waiting very patiently to talk with you, so let's go right back to the phone. Amy and Appleton is next. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I'm calling because I have a family heirloom. It's a fractor from 1805, and the colors are still vibrant. I'm sure it was egg paint, and it's decorated with Pennsylvania Dutch tulips, and it's written in High German. And so I've never had it translated. I mean, I know the names and I know the dates of the birth and the whole nine yards from the factor. But I was wondering, I've even called the Smithsonian and they don't have any, which I found hard to believe. But do you have any idea about anything like that?
And what is a factor, first of all, Shirley?
Well, it's actually kind of a very fancy certificate. Like we have a birth certificate today that's a little piece of paper. Well, they had these made. They were very elaborate designs and commemorated. They might have it for birth, for marriage, for confirmation, even something of that nature. So this is a nice old one. The thing that's very, very important about these are condition. A lot of families kept them around for a while, and then they got folded up, and they got, you know, damaged and destroyed, water damage, whatever it was. So to have one in nice condition, it's got to be excellent condition, and to be highly decorated with, you know, everything in really good condition. They still don't bring a lot of money because they are kind of a personal item, but they might be if it's a nice large one with, unless it's somebody famous, of course, mm-hmm. then it would make a difference. But generally speaking, they might be in the $100, give or take, depending on size.
Well, I read an article, and my mother had it restored because the corners had crumbled a little
yes,
bit.
Yes.
And the man that did the restoration actually put those all together like a jigsaw puzzle at the corners. I mean, it's really amazing. But I read an article which got my interest piqued that some of them were worth in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well,
and I thought, you know, it's just over 200 years old and still with us, so.
Yeah. Some of them, I think you'd probably have to go older than you are, first of all, to have that kind of value, and probably a prominent person. Now, I'm not saying yours, and also it makes a difference as to who did the painting on it, the decorating. You know, if it's a famous painter, that also might affect it. So there's a lot to look at, and you might talk to the State Historical Museum. I would believe that they have some, because we did see a lot of those more out of the German heritage and European culture. And so that might be why the Smithsonian doesn't have them, because they really focus on American history and such.
And Amy, you said that
there's... It says that he was born in Bucks County, so I know that's Pennsylvania. I still have family there. The woman at the Smithsonian gave me the name of a man in Milwaukee who's a paper specialist and knows about this stuff, and I've never been able to get a hold of him. And then a gallery in Minneapolis, which I wouldn't be able to get there. So
okay.
I was just curious if you knew anything about him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hang on to it, and I think you have something, a very nice family heirloom, and it certainly will continue to have value.
Great. Thanks for that call, Amy. And let's go to Anne in Rice Lake next. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I have one of those giant velvet paintings, original. And I you know, it's kind of a silly thing. They used to do the clowns. And I'm wondering if those are worth anything.
What is the subject of your painting?
It's the old man sailing a ship of some sort. Just like it just shows, like, kind of his torso.
Okay.
And it's signed, and it's large, and it's a velvet painting.
Well, you know, we always hear, and the old joke is the talk about the Velvet Elvis. And so that's become kind of a pop culture thing, as would be the dogs playing poker. And that's pop culture. Now, this one is an image that I don't think has become famous or known about. So they're kind of a kitsch pop culture thing, and I don't think they particularly have too much value. The ones with, like I say, the dogs and Elvis, just to kind of shows something that came about as sort of a joke, and they're still there. So I don't think your painting is particularly valuable, but somebody may like it just kind of for the fun
just
of it.
For fun. Great. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Anne. And Janet in Madison. Hi, Janet.
Hi. My grandfather's grandfather ran away from home when he was 12, so this would have been around the early 1820s, and he went and lived with John Brown's family and was raised as a brother to John Brown, so the family story goes.
Which anyway, John Brown?
John Brown, the insurrectionist.
Okay.
So we have a wallet in the family that... supposedly, there were two wallets tanned because John Brown's family were tanners. Is that maybe correct? And they tanned these two wallets, and one was given to John and one given to my relative, Lewis Daly. And it's signed, apparently, by John Brown. It isn't say John Brown, but it says, but it is supposedly his handwriting in Tanner's ink. So what do I do with this?
Oh, my, that's such a very specialized item. And, you know, John Brown, the abolitionist, you know, and he's immortalized by John Stuart Curry, who was artist in residence here at the University of Wisconsin, and that his painting of John Brown is in the Kansas State House. And so he's very well-known historical figure.
I would say even a mythic historical
figure. But he is a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you have the provenance to prove that. And what that is really is provable history that was in your family. And that's always important when we're talking about you know, well-known figures or the history of an object that has something to do with a famous person, place, or something like that. What do you do with your wallet? That, to me, seems like it might be, again, an item that an historical society mm-hmm. might be interested in, and maybe down in Kansas, in that area of the country where that family was located mm-hmm. where John Brown was immortalized. And they may have an interest in that. And again, at that point, you'd want it appraised and you could take the tax deduction if that's helpful to you, if you're, you know, itemize your taxes. But otherwise, that's what I think I would do with it. And I can't give you an idea what a wallet like that would be worth. I don't know that monetarily, it's worth nearly as much as it is historically. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of historically important to certain people.
Right.
You know, not necessarily nationally or something, but certainly that regional area. That's what I do.
I wasn't interested in value as much as getting it to an appropriate place.
Mm-hmm. I think that historical society down in Kansas would be the place to start.
Okay.
There may even be a section devoted to John Brown
yeah.
and some of the local museums down in that area, and they'd be able to tell you about that.
And if they had his handwriting, perhaps that would help.
Right.
Because they
right.
could compare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fascinating story, Janet. Thanks so much for sharing that with us. We are talking with Shirley Bauman, a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Rob Ferret, our on-air producer. And just to let all of you know, since Larry mentioned yesterday that he was having cataract surgery today, everything went just fine. So he will be back behind the mic on Thursday. We're looking forward to having him back. Shirley, there are some interesting pictures up on the Facebook page, and all of you, if you'd like to see those, you can go to The Larry Mueller Show. It's M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Robin posted a photo and said, "We are wondering about the value of this Majestic stove," and Majestic being the brand. not just an adjective.
Right. And this one that he's got posted up there is enameled in ivory and tan colored enamel, and it's got a shelf above it where it's really a warming shelf
mm-hmm.
where one would put, you know, something they wanted to keep a little warm but not actually on the
not keep cooking it.
right and we see these stoves. Condition is important. Again, working condition or not does make a difference. A lot of times we see these and it looks like the enamel is good on the front part of it that I can see. We'd be looking at maybe the range of $600 to $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not everybody wants one. They're not. A lot of people don't want to cook with that anymore,
right?
And they don't have the space for it as just a decorative element.
Right.
So the market is a little smaller than you would imagine.
It's a lovely looking. So what kind of time period would that be from?
Oh, probably the 20s.
Okay,
teens.
And we also have a photo, or actually a question from Diane. How do you find a reliable toy restorer for an Excelsior stuffed toy dog with natural, quote-unquote, fur, tail is partially broken?
Oh, my. That's something I've never been asked before. You might go on the Internet again, like on the International Society of Appraisers Facebook page, and ask that question. Mm. They might be able to give you some idea. You could also ask at some of the local museums, if you have a local museum around that has dolls and toys, because they would certainly have to have some restoration
done. Someone who
done.
Works on them. Right.
That's what I try to find at a toy doll museum that's close to you and ask about for some recommendations that way. And they might not recommend anybody, but they might give you several names of who mm-hmm. they use.
Great. Let's go back to the phones and Mark in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. Yes. I have a set of wall sconces that I took out of a house. We were gutting a house in Chicago years ago, and this house was built in the 20s. And I got a set of 8 sconces. I actually did post a picture of one on the Facebook page there. And I had 2 questions. I'm wondering if it would be better to sell them as pairs or as a whole set of 8. And also, because they're electrical, would it be better to upgrade the electrical parts of it to more modern electrical parts? Because it does they do actually work, but they've got some older, you know, light bulb sockets and switches.
That second part of the question is, yes, someone who would want to use them would need to have or want to have, certainly for, you know, safety reasons,
right.
Modern electrical components to it. They look lovely, and it's a hard thing to sell. If I were selling them at auction, what I would do is I'd get my bids, and I'd say it was times the money per each one, however many someone might want to take. So if they had a place for 4 of them, they might want 4, and they'd have to pay 4 times whatever they bid for them. Now, if you're going to sell them on yourself, you might go by pairs. And then they could take 1, 2, 3, or 4 pairs,
mm-hmm.
You know, if they have, you know, more places. So I think that's not a bad way to go with them. You'd probably be more likely to sell a pair than 8, because if someone wanted to put it in their home, they might not have room for 8 mm-hmm. and they wouldn't want to buy all 8. But if there was someone who wanted all 8, they could buy all 4 pair.
So surely it sounds like having a set of 8 doesn't necessarily increase the value.
Not in this case,
okay.
I don't think, because just like I said, homes are different now, and someone, you know, may not have a place for 8 sconces in their
right.
home. For some things, if that makes a complete collection, there are 8, I don't know, postcards in a military postcard collection series, then you'd want all 8 of them. But I don't think that's the case in this situation.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. And Dale on Facebook posted a picture of a horsehair chair and writes, "This horsehair chair is in poor condition. Family lore says it came from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, with the Quaker family in the late 1880s to northwest Iowa. What should be done with it?"
Well, you'll want to keep that one in the family, I think, because currently that's the sort of thing we were talking about before that is not selling to people.
Mm.
But I think you want to know about a restoration. If you can keep it as it is, all the better. If, you know, you're not going to use it the way it is, try and find a restorer who can keep it in as original condition as possible. Maybe just leave everything as it is and put a covering over it for you to use the way it is. Now, if the chair is, you can't sit in it, you might need to do some reinforcement in it, but make sure that the modern restoration can be undone.
Hmm.
That will help you keep the value of the chair.
All right. Thanks for the picture. And let's go to Lisa in Madison next. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, is there much of a market for Hudson Bay blankets? I have a mid-1920s, which I've identified by the label through Harold Tischner's Guide to Hudson Bay Blankets.
Sure, sure. The Hudson Bay blankets are the wool blankets that are ivory in color with a colorful stripe on it. I think they're usually in an orange, yellow, gold, and a greenish stripe on them, just to give people an idea. And not every blanket that looks like that is a true Hudson Bay blanket. So you have to have the label on it to make sure it is and authenticated. There is a market for them. They aren't as sought after as they were because people, you know, got confused with just every blanket that looked like one. But when I get them in an estate sale or something, they usually go in around the $75 to maybe tops $100.
Thank you.
So they're there.
All right. Thanks, Lisa. And let's go next to Barbara in Wausau. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. I have several things, but I talked to your first person about my aunt, who was a showgirl in the 1930s, and she did some appearances at the Copacabana. And this was a time when people just stood on the stage and looked pretty, like the Ziegfeld Follies. She wasn't a Follies girl, as I understand it, but she has these group pictures. And I also wondered if some of the people in those group pictures became famous and how I would find that. And I'm going to sneak in this thing about our cousin who was a manager and owner of the Bloomer, New York Bloomer Girls in 1929, and the team started in 1910, I believe. They were the only gals around, and they couldn't find female teams to play. I believe Ken Burns was looking for her when he was doing his thing about baseball, but he zeroed in on the girls in the 40s. But I do have newspaper articles and pictures of Gretchen Knobel, so I have these paper things, and I'm wondering to whom I could go.
Okay.
Okay, two questions, two big interesting items. The I don't really know how you would find out if some of these other showgirls became famous. I think you'd probably need to do an awful lot of research, and I'm not sure that the photos would have enough value to really do that kind of research in terms of economics. If you really want to do it for your personal interest, I think you'd probably go to some Hollywood-type memorabilia collector, dealer, and talk to them about it. Now, on this, the other item you were talking about, I believe, is a baseball team.
Correct.
And that may have more interest. Now, did you just have newspaper clippings or other?
Yes, I do. I have the clippings from 1929, and then as a retired person in 1961, she had a write-up in Florida where she retired.
But just okay.
but just
newspapers.
Newspapers.
But I do have, my cousin has the original scorekeeping material from Staten Island, New York, and photos of her as an interesting person.
Okay,
that might, those scorekeeping things in the photos might be of more interest. And again, we're talking about baseball history, and that whole women's baseball league became popular because of a movie some years ago. And I think I'd go and be looking for sports memorabilia dealers to get the information, or research it as sports memorabilia. Sounds like something very nice.
Postcards that they use as advertisement.
Oh, very good.
They were always looking for teams to play. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they had to play men's teams.
Sure, sure.
There were no women around
there. Sure.
Very interesting little part of history.
All right. Thanks for that call. And we had a question on the Facebook page. Also, we talked about silver earlier. What does sterling reinforced mean? I have 2 5-inch silver candlesticks that have this stamped on the bottom along with a date of April 4th, 1882. They're heavy.
Okay. I think what it's speaking to is being reinforced as being weighted with cement or sand in them, and that with the candlesticks, we see that a lot, and a lot of times nowadays, or later days, they were marked as weighted, and that's so they didn't tip over or, you know, melt very quickly. So you have the weighted is probably the reinforced.
And so when we were talking earlier about being able to melt something down.
Well, it could be melted down, but if you weigh it, you're going to be weighing that sand,
sand
or cement or whatever is in there.
Right.
So you'd have to open that up and destroy the candlestick to do that.
Right.
So you'd want to know ahead of time kind of if you really want those candlesticks or not.
Right. All right. Thanks for that question. And Shirley, I want to make sure we remind people that you have a couple interesting online auctions going on. The site is Bauman Auctions, plural.com, and Bauman is B-A-U-M-A-N-N, BaumanAuctions.com. There's an antique locks and keys auction that goes through tomorrow. So if people are interested in that, they'll want to check that out. And, you know, certainly interesting to look at whether or not you're in the market for any. And then through a week from today, July 24th, you have one of Barbie dolls. And so those are up at BaumanAuctions.com. And also your website for appraisals is heirloomappraisalsingular.com. So yes. heirloomappraisalsingular.com. And Shirley Bauman, it's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who called in. And they just, there's so many wonderful things out there that we can talk about.
And this is the first time we've had you on for a whole 90 minutes.
Actually, there was one
there
other
was
time.
One other time?
Okay. Yes. But,
well, certainly. And unfortunately, there were even calls and emails and Facebook questions that we didn't even get to with an hour and a half of your time. But certainly a lot of interest and a lot of really fascinating family stories, especially today.
And that's where we find the most interesting things. And that's why the roadshow is so successful.
Exactly.
Because people find those things in their homes and families.
Exactly. Well, thanks again, Shirley. We'll definitely have you back. Just want to let you know, tomorrow at 11, I'll be talking with Daniel Shamovitz. He joins us to talk about his fascinating book. It really is, What a Plant Knows, A Field Guide to the Senses. And then after, we will talk up with the authors of Gifts of the Crow about intelligent birds. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.